My wife, I assume. Alright, so we're going to continue this week. Last week we began talking about the introduction to Kedusha, and we discussed a couple of points about differences between the Kedusha of the Malachim and the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. We discussed that the Kedusha that we say in Uval Letzion and in Birkas Kriyashma is really just a retelling of what the Malachim do, as opposed to the Kedusha that we do in Shmona Esrei is actually our own Kedusha. And we discussed last week this idea of that our Kedusha begins with a Nikadesh, with a kind of a call to action, that we should all start together and try and touch back on some of those points tonight. So to start off, I mentioned last week that there's a Gemara that seems to imply against what our Nusach of Kedusha says. We start and we say that we say Nikadesh Hashemcha Ba'olam. I brought the Siddurim if anybody wants. We don't really need them, but some people just like to have them. So everyone would be uncomfortable. We say Nikadesh Hashemcha Ba'olam. Let us be Mekadesh your name. Kishem Shemakdishim Oso Bishmei Marom. Like they do, Bishmei Marom, like the angels do up in heaven. So it seems to imply that we copy them, and that they are kind of the point of origin of Kedusha. However, the Gemara in Chulin on Sadi Aleph Amud Beis 91b, the Gemara says that Klal Yisrael, that the Jewish people say Kedusha first, and it proves it from Psukim. The Gemara says, Ein Malachi Asharis Omrim Shir Lamala Ad Sheyomru Yisrael Lamata, that Klal Yisrael does not, that the Malachim do not sing their song above until the Yisrael say it below. Shene'emar, as it says, Baran Yachad Kochve Bakar, Kochve Boker, Vahadar Vayiria Kol Pnei Elokim. That first it says that Baran Yachad, that Klal Yisrael, that they sing together, that they have their Rina. And then afterwards it follows up with Vayiria Kol Pnei Elokim and all of the godly beings, all of the angels, that they raise their voices. So the Gemara says that you see that it's first us and them, that they don't say Kedusha until we do. So how exactly do the two fit together? Here we say Kashem Shemakti Shimoso, that we're going to do it like they do it. But in the Gemara, it seems to imply that the reality is that that our Kedusha precedes and preempts their Kedusha. So exactly how do those two things fit together? So I present two ideas, which I think are both very Yesodistic, very fundamental ideas in Kedusha. The Avudraham says that the idea is that we don't want to be mispa'er, we don't want to be self-glorifying with our Kedusha. That the truth is that we go first, like the Gemara says, but when we say Kedusha, we downplay our own role, we downplay the centrality of our own Kedusha, and we say we're going to do it like the Malachim do, because we're not trying to focus on our own loftiness, we're not trying to focus on the fact that our Kedusha, that we're so important, that we're saying Kedusha, and we say that we're saying Kedusha just like the Malachim do. You're not the only ones who say Kedusha, Malachim also say Kedusha, and we're trying to kind of remove ourselves from the center, from the focus of attention in saying Kedusha, and that it should not be self-glorifying, an act of, you know, kind of lifting ourselves up when we say Kedusha. And this is a very important central point in praising Hashem. The point of Kedusha is to praise Hashem. And the point is not that I am praising Hashem, but that Hashem is praised. I am not and should not be trying to express my significance. There's a halacha that anybody who says that I want, anybody who comes up and says, you know, I need to daven, right? I mean, if they have, you know, some chiyuv that they have to daven from the oven, but somebody says, you know, I really want to daven. So you don't take that person to daven, because anybody who wants to come up to the Amud to do a nice performance is not what you're looking for when it comes to daven. Somebody can say, I'm going to daven. that's not the tefillah that we're looking for. That's not the shaliach that you want for the tzibor. That the idea of is not that I am praising Hashem, but the idea is that Hashem is being praised. Similarly, regarding the malachim, it says when we say that kishim shemak tishim, like they do in Shemayim, the kara ze el ze va'amar, we say, and they call to each other and they say. So the Avudraham says again there also that that the malachim, what is it, v'kara ze el ze, that they call one to the other, that they're taking rishus, they're getting permission from each other, so that they all start together. There's no one going ahead of any of the others. And the same reason we mentioned that we say nikadesh, we start our kedusha with a nikadesh, with a call to action, to summon everyone, so that we all start at once, because we're not trying to be better than anyone else in being mekadesh. You're not trying to be the one who goes first to make sure that my kedusha is the kedusha that's, you know, important and gets out there. The focus is on the kedusha, not on the mekadesh. The focus is that the kedusha should be made, not that I said kedusha, but that Hashem was niskadesh. There's a lot of discussion in the mistake that Adam HaRishon made. What exactly was the chait of Adam HaRishon? A lot of discussion in the Rishonim that, you know, the Yetzer Hara was the Nachash represented the nation. The Yetzer Hara was an external force to Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon was an individual who was, you read the Midrashim, the Malachim wanted to say Shira to Adam HaRishon. It says that he was so holy and lofty that the Malachim actually got confused and thought they should say Shira to him. So to think that Adam HaRishon was, you know, some, you know, bumbling fool that Hashem said, you know, like, don't eat the fruit, and he was like, no, I really like the fruit, and he ate it, you know, like, so it's a little bit of a superficial understanding, and some of the, let's just call them the deeper sources, discuss this idea that in all of the Torah, we always say that what's being presented is the pshat, is, you know, what the story, the pshat, the simple understanding of the psukim is what actually happened. And if you want, if you, you know, go deep enough, you can get to, you know, the deeper spiritual concept behind it. But when it comes to the story of Bracious, they say that it's the opposite, that what's being discussed on the surface, you know, a garden with snakes, talking snakes, and people covering themselves with leaves and all these things, that's actually what's being expressed on the surface level is actually the depth of the story, and what is, and it's if you plumb deep enough that you could get down to the historical account of what actually happened. But the reading the story of Adam HaRishon on a surface level is really getting a very superficial kind of understanding of it. And so what exactly was the chait? What exactly was the mistake of Adam HaRishon? And the idea, it's brought out in a number of sources, but the idea of what happened with Adam HaRishon was that Hashem gave Adam HaRishon this cosmic, incredible loftiness, this kedusha, that even the malachim wanted to say shira to him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, what I want you to do is not eat from the tree, is to refrain from doing anything. And Adam HaRishon said, you gave me all of this incredible potential, and you want me to not use it? You want me to just sit back? And that's what Hashem said. He said, yes, I want you to, you know, I hand you the world, just don't break it, right? Just hold it and don't mess it up. And Adam HaRishon made a cheshbon. He made a calculation, which is a very difficult calculation, and we all struggle with this kind of thing. But Adam HaRishon made a calculation, and he said that Hashem gave me such an easy job, that doesn't show my dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't show how far I'm willing to go to do what Hashem wants. But if I would smash it and then put it back together, if I distance myself and then show that from a distance I'm willing to struggle to come back, so then I would be then I'll really be able to truly show my dedication and my devotion. And other Rishon, it's hard to point and say that he was so far off, because Chazal say Gedola Avera Lishma Mi Mitzvah Shalo Lishma, that an Avera done for the right reason is greater than a mitzvah done for the incorrect reasons. Before anyone goes home and decides that they have some very holy averas that they need to do, there are a lot of limitations on exactly what that means. But the Chazal do say that an avera lishma it can be a great thing. So what exactly? Where did Adam Arishon go wrong? Where Adam Arishon went wrong was that, what was the cheshbon? Hashem said that I want you to just sit back and do nothing. And Adam Arishon said, but where am I? If all I'm supposed to do is sit back, and I'm basically just supposed to be mevatel myself, I'm just supposed to, say, okay, I'm not going to do anything. So there's no me in the Avodas Hashem. I'm supposed to, kind of Hashem gave me autonomy and then says, don't do anything with it. And it's the nisayon, you can understand, the challenge goes to the very heart of what a person is. God gave us a sense of being an autonomous, self-existing creation. And then he says to him, but don't do anything with it. Just, kind of return yourself to me. Don't do anything with all of the potential and the strength that I gave you. But the mistake of Adam Rishon was that this obviously on the level of that the incredible level that he was on, but on that level there was an ani, there was a me, that there was an I want to be Mekadesh Hashem, that I want to sanctify Hashem's name. And that, and this gets into that discussion of where this the sugya, the discussion of Avera Lishma, really meets its limitations. As soon as there's any inkling of it's for me, as soon as there's a me involved, it's no longer the same cheshbon. It's no longer the same discussion. It's no longer an Avera Lishma, even if it's only some tiny inkling of my own self being involved. But at that point, the cheshbon is totally off. And Adam Arishon, the idea was supposed to be, yes, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, just don't mess it up. Just be mevatel yourself. Show that I'm the one in charge. And Adam Arishon, the failure of that in that nisayon was to say that I need to be involved, that I need to be the one who's Mekadesh Shem Hashem.
It seems to me that God gave us free will. So if Adam was in the Garden of Eden where he could have everything he wanted, the only way to express his free will is to not do something. That's the only thing that gave him, that made his will worth having. So I don't see him saying, I've got to not do that. That's the one thing he was asked to do, is exercise his free will not to do something. That's the only thing he could do. So it seems like it doesn't... That's a fit with the story in that way.
I didn't understand. What do you mean? That?
So then, how could Adam say, I have to do this Avera in order to come back, in order to show that I have will? By exercising his restraint, he was exercising his free will. That's what he was asked to do by Hashem.
Right, what he was asked to do was exercise his restraint.
But he could say, okay, now I'm being truly human. I'm exercising my human free will not to do something I could otherwise do. That's the only thing he could do.
Well, I mean, the thing that he saw that he could do is he thought he could do something much more, which is he could make it into a much harder struggle and show with much more sacrifice.
But also it was his wife who did it, and and then came to him and said, she did it and said, see, there's no problem, this is fine. So, I mean, it was a whole different, it didn't seem to be about God, it seemed to be about,
So that's, there is certainly other elements to the story, and that gets very much into what I was kind of introduced it with, which is the pshat level and the... But this certainly is a valid point. But I think not the discussion for right now. But the basic point that in terms of what we're discussing is just this idea that the most fundamental mistake is when not realizing that it's not about that I am a Kaddish Hashem, but it's about that Hashem is Niskadish. There's a halacha. The Gemara says that a person who's walking down the road, and he comes to a fork in the road, and one path leads, through the woods to get where he's going, and the other path leads by the river, where there will be women doing their laundry. And back then, before the advent of the laundry machine, so they would be in the water and bending over and whatever it was, and rolling their sleeves up in positions that weren't exactly the most the most modest. And the person says to himself that, you know, what am I here for? I'm here to be Omid Ben Nisayon. I'm here to stand up to the challenges. So I'm going to go along the path that leads past the river, and I'm not going to look. And he goes down that path, and he doesn't look, says the Gemara, Nikra Rasha, that person is called evil. Why? Because
he had the other path through the forest.
He had the other path, but he went through, and he was Omid Ben Nisayon. So what did he do? What he did was God never told you to be a hero. God said, "Do what I want you to do, to put yourself into Nisayon, to take the risk, to be willing to risk, because I'm going to show that I can do it, that I can follow what Hashem says." That itself belies the fact that you're more interested in you doing Ratzon Hashem than in Hashem's Ratzon be done. Right? And that there's a famous story with the Vilna Gaon, that the Dubno Magid came. There was a contemporary and friend of the Vilna Gaon, and the Dubno Magid used to go around and give mussar, and that was kind of his expertise. And he came to the Gra, and the Gra said, "I want you to give me mussar." And the Dubno Magid said, "You know, how could I give you mussar?" And the Gra said, "No, I need you to give me mussar." So the Dubno Magid said to the Gra, so he said that, you know, it's for a person to hold themselves up and sit by the fire and stay warm is not so difficult. It's much harder, you know, to go outside and to go out and still to stay warm. He basically, it's an expression, a tzaddik in pelt, that, you know, a tzaddik who wraps themselves up and kind of secludes themselves off. And he says that, you know, it's no kunz to be, you know, such a big tzaddik, such a big talmud chacham, when you just, you know, close yourself off from the world and just sit here and be, you know, closed off from the rest of the world. So the story goes that the Vilna Gaon, that first he cried, and then he responded to the Dubno Magid, and he said, "And where does it say that Hashem wants you to do a kuntz? Right? Where does it say that Hashem needs you to do a trick? Right? That I'm sitting here and I didn't do it, and it would be much harder. You're right. It would be much harder. Who said Hashem needs you to do it the hard way? Hashem wants you to do what He wants you to do. He doesn't say that you have to do it with a trick. He doesn't say that you have to do it with, make it a challenge. Hashem wants you to do what He wants you to do, and that's what I'm doing. And that was the Hashem isn't asking you to do a trick. The goal is not to assert your ability to do Ratzon Hashem. The goal is that Ratzon Hashem be done." There's a Rav Yaakov Weinberg used to contrast two stories. There's a story about the Vilna Gaon, that one year in Vilna there were no esrogim. They couldn't get an esrog for Sukkos. And there was one rich fellow who managed to get an esrog, and he had the only esrog in Vilna. And he brought it to the Vilna Gaon, and he said, I'll let the Rav take my esrog and use my esrog to perform the mitzvah as long as I get the schar for the mitzvah." And the Vilna Gaon was very happy, and he said, "Yes, I would love to do it. And, you know, it's an opportunity to do the mitzvah lishma, right? I'll do the mitzvah, you'll get the schar." And he agreed. There is another story that the Baal Shem Tov, that whatever it was that the story says, that he had made some, you know, mistake in about something or something like that. And, you know, he got a chalom, a dream, that he was told that he was not going to, that he lost his schar in Olam Haba. And so that he woke up and he was so happy because he was told he wasn't getting schar for what he did, that now he could do mitzvos lishma, right? And those are the two stories. And Rav Yaakov Weinberg said, the first story is true and the second story is not. Why? What's the difference? Because in the first story, the goal of mitzvos, the tachlis of the world, the Ramchal says, is that Hashem wanted to be mativ, He wanted to give schar, and by me doing mitzvos, so I enable Hashem to give schar, and basically my goal is that Hashem should be able to fulfill the purpose that He created the world for, and to give schar, and I enable that by doing mitzvos. So what do I care if I get the scar or if you get the scar? The tachlis is that Hashem was able to be mativ, right? So if I get the scar, you get the scar. So I'll shake the esrog and you'll get the scar. So it's all the same. The goal isn't that I get for me. The goal is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to be mativ. But in the other story with the Baal Shem Tov, no one was getting scar. He was told, you lost your scar. And he was happy about that. Why should he be happy about that? The whole tachlis of the world is that a Kaddish Baruch should be mative. There's nothing to be doing mitzvos lishma for no scar. Not because now I lost out and it's going to be bad for me. But that a Kaddish Baruch's whole tachlis in creating the world was to give scar. And if I'm no longer a part of that, so then I'm not interested in that. But the story with the Gra, that was the whole point, is that I don't care if I'm the one getting scar. As long as schar is being given, as long as the goal of a kaddish bar of the tachlis that a kaddish baruch who created the world, what do I care if it's me or you? The goal is just that the tachlis is accomplished, that Hashem's purpose for the world is reached. And that's,
didn't they both have had schar? I mean, he made a bracha with his nesur, then he gives it to the Quran, he makes the bracha. I mean, they both get schar.
Well, no, I mean, certainly, I think the rich man was also going to use the esrog. He just wanted to leverage schar. His.
Double schar.
Yes, he wanted double schar.
That seems to go against what we were saying earlier. That it shouldn't be about us. It should be about.
Nobody's saying that the rich guy was doing the right thing. The point was what the Vilna Gaon was saying. But I think that this is all included in this avudram. That the point when we say that we're doing just like the angels are doing, even though, as the Gemara in Chulin says, we're doing much more than the angels are doing. We really come before the angels, and the angels' kedusha comes after ours. But we don't want to. Well, that's not our point. Our goal is not to say, look at us, we're so great. We say we're saying kedusha just like the malachim say the kedusha. We don't want to say, look at our kedusha. The point is that kedusha is being said, and Hashem's name is being niskadesh. And that's the goal. And as long as that's, we're not interested in putting in being the center of attention. The goal is specifically not to be the center of attention. The goal of kedusha is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the center of attention. And that's the kishem shemakdishim also, that we say just like they do it in Shemayim. Another idea, the Nefesh HaChaim also addresses this question. And the Nefesh HaChaim says that the reason we say it this way is that we say it just like they say it in Shemayim, because they happen together. They happen at the same time. But we are first, and they're immediately after us. So when we say Kishem Shemagdishim Oso, it's true. As we say it, they'll be saying it also. But the order that it actually happens is that we start Kedusha, and once we've started Kedusha, then the Malachim also say their Kedusha. They start immediately as we finish, or immediately after as we are finishing. But says the Nefesh HaChaim that our Kedusha is first, and then comes their Kedusha. So what exactly is the significance of that? So as we mentioned before, we mentioned last week, our Kedusha is Ba'olam. Nekadesha Shimcha Ba'olam, that let us sanctify your name in the world. That our Kedusha is Kedusha in this world. Our Kedusha is Kedusha, which starts from down here, out of the Choshech, out of the Hester, out of the hiddenness of this world, that we create Kedusha. They are only able to say Kedusha because we say Kedusha. The reason their Kedusha immediately follows ours is because our Kedusha enables and causes their Kedusha. Their Kedusha is pulled after ours, is immediately following, and is resulting from our Kedusha. Because a Baal Bechira, someone who does something through their own free will, is the center of creation. They're the actions of someone with Bechira reach all the way up to the highest point of existence and move, in effect, everything trickles back down from there. The Nefesh HaChaim says, right at the very beginning of the Sefer, he says that it says in Pasuk in Bereishis, it says by the creation of Adam, it says, Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, that he breathed into his nose, into his nostril, nishmas chayim, a neshama of life, a breath of life, Vayihi ha'adam linefesh chaya, and man became nefesh chaya. So the different opinions in the Mefarshim about exactly what that means, but the Nefesh HaChaim says, he says it as an additional point, and he reads it into the pasuk. You're not going to go into the grammatical point that he makes, but he says that Adam became the soul of all life, of all of existence, that through being a physical being with a neshama, by being a yitzar min adama, being formed out of the ground, and by having a nishmas chayim breathed into him, that he became the soul, the energy point, that which gave animation and life to all of existence. That the combo, being a combination of the spiritual and the physical, and having a choice between them, man became the moving force of all life and all existence. That our actions reach above those of all the other spiritual beings because we are a combination of the physical and the spiritual. What exactly this means, the Ramchal in Derech Hashem says that Adam, that man, is the only creation that moves and isn't moved, that he reaches up and back down. What exactly does that mean? So all processes in the physical world are products of the spiritual world. The world really starts from the spiritual, the creation of the world. Ramchal describes in the end of Das Tfunos how the creation of the world really started from the most highest physical point, and in layers, you know, became more and more, less and less of a purely physical until you got to the world, which is, you know, our world, which is the physical world. But the world starts with the spiritual and trickles down to the physical. And every process in the world follows that same pattern. And the physical world is really a reflection of the spiritual, because the physical is, everything physical in the world is linked to its spiritual source. And normally, the way it works is that the spiritual moves the physical, that physical activity is a response to what is happening in the spiritual world. There's a whole metaphysics of the Olamos and the Spheros and how all of these spiritual goings-on are happening in a whole nother world, and that is really the events that shape the what happens in the physical world. But man is the one existence which breaks the mold, and man moves on his own. And the spiritual source that he is linked to moves in response to his actions down here. And through his physical actions in the physical world, he can wreak spiritual havoc or create spiritual edifices. Just as a mashal, you know, you imagine a boat, and you have the fishing line, and there's a little fish on the that's caught onto the bottom of the line, and as the boat moves, so it pulls the fish along, right? So the fish down there under the water is kind of being, what's happening up above the surface is really, you know, pulling along the fish. Now imagine you've got another fishing line outside the other side of the boat, and a great white shark comes along and grabs onto that one and starts pulling the boat. So now you've got the movement down here is pulling the boat, and then the boat has the other lines that are coming out of it, and all of those are being dragged. The changes, the effect that the shark made up on the surface are now trickling back down to everything else that was connected to. In the same way that the great white shark, that Adam, that man down here is able to pull the strings from down here and make changes in that in the spiritual realm, and everything that he does up there and changes up there then reflects back down to what it's connected back down to in the physical world. If he destroys something in the spiritual world, then that's going to cause a destruction that's going to trickle back down in the physical world. There's spiritual ramifications of our physical actions. I don't remember where it comes from. A famous I think it comes from the Nefesh HaChaim from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that he told his Talmidim that they should have, that they in Volozhin should have proper kavana when putting on their tefillin. They should make sure to put on their tefillin with the proper kavana in order that the Jews in France will keep Shabbos, right? Because our mitzvos have spiritual reverberations, that what we do makes effects up in Shemayim, and that trickles back down into this world. The spiritual level and the spiritual energy of this world is really impacted and reflected by what we accomplish. One last point, that when we say kadosh, 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 so the minog is that we do na'anuim, that we raise ourselves up on our on our toes three times as we say each word kadosh, and we'll talk about that in our next class, hopefully. But the Nefesh HaChaim says that the Na'anuim, the lifting up on our toes that we do when we say kadosh, 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 is to symbolize that by our Kedusha, that we are elevating the Olamos, that we are lifted, we lift ourselves up to show that we're lifting up the world. When we say Kedusha, we are elevating the world to a higher spiritual plane than it was before. And that's the effect of our Kedusha, which is Ba'olam, which is down here in the physical world. We're able to make decisions and to make changes and effects on the spiritual world, which then reverberate and impact the entirety of creation with their effects. And that's like the Gemara says, that our Kedusha is first. Our Kedusha preempts their Kedusha, because it's only because we say Kedusha that we create that spiritual influx, that spiritual elevation, which then prompts the Malachim to launch into their Kedusha. Their Kedusha is a result of the Kedusha that we create.
So Rabbi Sachs last week, in his
Covenant in Conversation.
Yeah, it wasn't the one that's printed, the one he has a podcast
okay.
about the last two parshiot in Sefer Shmos when they're talking about the Mishkan. So right, we're creating space for Hashem. But he made a beautiful connection. He said that when Hashem created the world, he had to be mitzamtzem to give us the space to act. And when we make space for when we're mitzamtzeming ourselves, that's what brings Kedusha back down. Because we can fill we can choose how we're using space and time, and when our own symptom is the thing that can bring Hashem back into the world. So just, I never thought of it that way. I thought it was a beautiful parallel.
Right, very nice. Right. All right. So we'll pause here for tonight, and.
So can I ask another question?
Yeah. You want to be on record?
No. The fact that.